Let me share with you a very familiar verse out of the scripture. It comes out of what is known as the love chapter, out of Paul's letter to the Corinthian church, his first letter. It's 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 through 7. If you've been to a wedding lately, you've probably heard these words. Love is patient, love is kind, love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way, it is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. This is the good news of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I loved going to my grandmother's house growing up. It was a fun place to be. Grandma was a fun person, as a matter of fact. Grandma lived in Little Rock, Arkansas, and she and Grandpa had an old Victorian house. It was a boarding house, actually, and let me tell you, around every different corner there was a new adventure. All those rooms upstairs, you know, where the boarders would stay, and when there weren't people up there, we could go and play in those rooms. There was a porch swing out on the front porch, and one of those big Victorian doors with the doorbell that you could turn that would make the sound right in the middle of the door. And I know that Grandma and my aunts and my uncles never got tired of me doing that, turning that doorknob or doorbell. It was great fun. Grandma, the grandma's name is Annie Ophelia Rosetta Mary Alice Jane Alameda Foster Myra Payne. That was my grandmother's name, and they called her Ophie. Out of all of that, how would you pick Ophie? She had three sisters. One of her sisters was Belle. That was all she got. So Grandma got all these names. Belle just got one name. We never could quite figure it out. But it was just wonderful to go and to visit with them and to experience all of the things that went on at the house. And my mother had four brothers, and each of them had something that was fun for a kid my age at that time to delve into. My Uncle Tommy had an old truck with an Ooga horn, and he'd let me ride with him and honk the horn. There was my Uncle Bob had a boat, and that was always good. We could go out on the lake. My uncle Oak would greet me, and whenever we would see each other, he would get into this position, and he'd say, "Get your shooting irons ready." I had no clue what a shooting iron was. I didn't know what they were at all, but I knew that somehow I was supposed to draw a gun and I was supposed to shoot, and I always knew that I was going to win, because when I would shoot, Uncle Oak would fall to the ground and writhe in pain. It was always fun with Uncle Oak. My uncle Elmer was the one who always had the funny sayings. He was probably the funniest of the brothers. I remember one time we were at the lunch table. We had all sat down for lunch, and my Uncle Elmer, well, he burped at the table. I don't know how to say that nicely. He just let one kind of slip out, and my grandmother flew all over him. I mean, she laid him low, just telling him how rude that was, how horrible it was. And after she finished her tirade, he said, "Well, Mom, I'm sorry, but I must have just tied my shoe too tight." So anyway, there was always something like that from Uncle Elmer. And Mom got those kind of sayings, too. I don't know if it's a little bit about Little Rock or Arkansas or what it is, but Mom has always said something funny. And you all know Mom's 100 years old now, and still she will come out with something that I don't think I'd heard yet. She's just got a plethora of sayings. One of my very favorites is when she would see one of us or somebody else in something that just didn't fit, clothing that didn't fit us. She would say, "That looks like socks on a rooster." The picture of that has always been a great picture for me, this kind of look of socks on a rooster. They just wouldn't at all fit. But when I think about it, it's a great image for what Paul would teach us in his letters. There's a theme that goes through Paul's letters about putting on Christ. And in Paul's letters, what he was trying to say was that as we live out the Christian life, we're going to try to place upon us the attributes and the ways of that Jesus attempted to live and showed us the way of love throughout his life. to the Romans. Paul was encouraging them in their lives to ready themselves for the second coming of Christ. And so he said to them, put on the Lord Jesus Christ. And he told them, he said, let us then lay aside the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. To the Galatians, Paul wrote about Jesus making all of us children of God, and out of that faith that we were to clothe ourselves with Christ. And then again, when he was writing to the Ephesians, he said that we should take off the old self, our former selves, and we should be renewed by the spirit of our minds and make sure that we put on a new self that was created by the likeness of God. This was a theme that ran through Paul. And I think it's a great image. You remember, you know, those times where we try to fit something onto us and we hope that it fits. I mean, how many times have you been in department store dressing room lately? I mean, either taking those clothes back that you got for Christmas or making sure that you've been a part of one of the sales that's been going on, and you go into the dressing room with all this pile of clothes and you put them on, and if you're like me, they're all too tight around the middle, and for me, they're all baggy in the seat and they're too long in the legs and the cuffs are dragging the floor, and I'll walk out and look in the mirror and I'll go, God, just socks on a rooster. It just doesn't quite fit. I think about the way that that we look at how we place Christ upon us. This image of Paul that Paul gives us of putting on Christ, how putting on the being of Christ, there's just too many times that it doesn't quite fit on us. It looks like socks on a rooster. When I was young, I was always dressing up in different clothes, and I'd like to get my dad's clothes, and I would put on his shoes, and I'd put on his jacket, and I'd put on his hat, and sometimes take his pipe, which was, I'm sure, very attractive. But I would walk out, and obviously it didn't fit. I trip all over myself. It just was not something that that was going to work at all. And I'm afraid that's the way it is with us as we try to put on Christ. It just doesn't fit. But it is the call to who we are to be. That is who we are searching, seeking, longing to be in our lives. It's to be those who take the attributes of Christ and to place them on our lives. And that's really been the inspiration of this sermon series. I've wanted to share with you some of the things that we might look at, the attributes that Christ showed to us, so that we could also share with Christ those things that he did. One of the things we'll be talking about, and we'll be talking about that today, is kindness. We'll be looking at patience. We'll be looking at humility. Some of those things down the road. But today we're going to talk about kindness. You know, the early Christians, the first time the word Christian was ever used was recorded in the book of Acts. And it was literally that the people called the new Christians, these people after the death and resurrection of Jesus, they were called little Christs. They were literally looking at them and seeing how they acted and seeing how they lived and seeing how they loved and how they cared for one another. And they said, this reminds me of the one they called Christ, Jesus. They're like little Jesuses running around. They had put on the clothing of Christ, and people had noticed. It had fit very well, in fact. And so we see these little Christs learning how it is that we are going to be able to put on some of those things in our lives. How it is that we will act as Christ acted, and how we can love as Christ loved. You know, those early Christians, they loved one another. They shared their possessions and their food with one another. They showed compassion not only for one another, but also for the children and for women and for all of those who had been marginalized by their society. Like Jesus, these new Christians, these first generation Christians, sought to act like him and be like him. They wanted to be like Jesus in that he had said he had come to serve rather than to be served. They wanted to make people more, and so they had to become less. They wanted others to be first, and so they had to be last. Christ was the person that they had decided that they would put on. It was the clothing that they decided that they would wear. Jesus was the one that didn't look like socks on a rooster to them because, as the scripture says, look at how they loved one another. Look at how they loved people. So it's really love that enables us to fit into the clothing of Christ. And as we learned out of 1 Corinthians, love is kind. And so what is it about kindness that we can find in our lives? Putting on kindness that will enable us to be the Christians where folks look at us and say, don't say, boy, that looks like socks on a rooster on that person. Christianity just doesn't quite fit the way that person's living or the way that that person is going about their daily life. The love chapter in 1 Corinthians says that love is kind. It is not envious. It's not boastful. It's not arrogant. It's not rude. It does not insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. And what it's saying by that is that when you love out of kindness, that there's not anything that you try to do to put yourself above another person. You can't be envious or boastful if you're going to truly be kind, because you're lowering yourself so that you can be of the same kind of status as another person. But you're also making sure that they feel good about themselves. You're never arrogant or rude. It's about the way that you treat other people and that you want to treat people out of love. And so often I find good, loving, caring people that I see on a regular basis do something that's just really out of character. Like, instead of opening the door for someone and let three or four people in, they'll rush through the door first and make sure that they get to whatever's there first. You know, it's just those simple things that I think that we can look at and to see what it is and how it is that we will respond. Doesn't insist on its own way. It's not really about us. It's about others. It's not irritable or resentful. How do you live out your life just in that ability to be nice to other folks? It is not something that rejoices in the wrong. It rejoices in the truth. It's not something. Have you ever known those folks that love somebody else to mess up? And when they mess up, it just makes them feel better about themselves? I think that too many times do we look around us and we try to make ourselves feel better by the shortcomings or the difficulties of other folks. I do think that when we look at Jesus' life, we can see this life of kindness. First of all, Jesus noticed other people. And this is what I would say to us is some of what we need to do. We notice other people and we recognize his or her needs. That's one of the things that Jesus did a wonderful job. He saw the woman at the well. He knew what her struggles were. He was able to empathize with her and to talk with her. She was amazed at what he was able to know about her life. Not because he had some kind of mystical power, but because he just identified with her and looked into her life to see what it was that she needed. The Zacchaeus, who wanted to see Jesus, but he was on the outskirts of society, and so he climbed up a tree, and Jesus came up to him and says, "Hey, Zacchaeus, I think I'll come over and have dinner with you." I mean, it was just exactly what Zacchaeus needed. It's an ability to take ourselves out of the quotient. It is making sure that when we look at somebody else, we're not looking at our own needs, but we're looking at their needs. Did you know that the reason that you can't remember somebody else's name when you're just introduced to them is because scientists say that it's because you're concentrating on how that person is perceiving you. You are so intent on looking at yourself that you can't hear what the other person is saying. So you don't even hear their name. It just flies right over your head. And we need to take that focus off of ourselves and place it back on the other person as Jesus did. I remember years ago, I was an associate pastor at First Methodist Church in Denton. It was August. It was time for school to start. All these students were coming in, and one of the things I was responsible for was for the college ministry there at the church. And as we were greeting people at the end of the last service, the senior pastor came over to me and he said, "Did you see that guy standing over in the corner?" He said, "I think he's a student. Why don't you go check on him?" And literally, I can't exaggerate this. He was standing with his back in the corner. And this young man, his name was Jim, he was so introverted. He had been beat up so much emotionally and maybe even physically in his life that he had such a low self-image that he could not even bring himself to be a part of the discussion that was going on in the hallway of the church. And so I went over and I talked to him for a little while, and I invited him to our group meeting that night. Wouldn't you know he'd come? And I had Jim on my hands for the next 4 years. I tell you what, this group of college students took Jim under their wing. They looked at him, and they saw his need, and they cared for this young man. I don't know where Jim would be today if it weren't for that group. I have to believe that Jim would either have killed himself or would have killed somebody else. Jim's anger was so great. I've never seen a more angry young man than Jim. Because anything that would happen, he would see it as an assault on him and on his person. And so he would become very frustrated and very angry, and we would always try to build him up and try to help him see the good side of him. I think Jim's alive today and not in prison today, because there were a group of young Christian people who decided that they were going to recognize him and they were going to take care of him. And they were going to help him through his needs. You never know when you come up to somebody what they're going through. You know, you never know what it is that they're angry about or hurt about or worrying about. And so you're driving down the road and somebody cuts you off, and you immediately take that as something against yourself rather than thinking, what's going on with that person? What is it that I can do that would make a difference in their life? You never know what a simple smile, a simple recognition, a simple door that's being opened can make a difference in somebody's life. Kindness, the simplest form of love, is often the greatest thing that you can do. The second thing about kindness is that we do what Jesus did, and that was that we serve rather than being served. This idea of Jesus' hands were kind hands, that he was serving others, and that we are to do the same, that we're not to put ourselves first, but to put others first. And being kind is sacrificial. Being kind is taking a piece of yourself and giving that piece up so somebody else can find enjoyment in their life. I think that there's all sorts of different ways that you can be kind. One of the things that I found over the years is that you need to allow people to be kind to you. And that's one of the hardest things for us to do. A lot of times there's a death in the family, and so I'll say, you know, the church wants to fix a meal for you, or there are people in the church that want to do this, or somebody wants to come and mow your grass. Oh, no, I couldn't let them do that. No, that's just too big of a bother. And yet, if you allow them to do that, you're allowing them to be kind. Why is it that we don't want them to do it? It's because somehow we want to be our own person. We want to feel as though we don't need anybody else. But it's a gracious thing to do to allow somebody else to be kind to you, to lower yourself enough to allow them to share their love and kindness to you. One of the things that I know that kindness is a part of God's work is that kindness always energizes me, and I'm sure it's the same with you. But I can tell you, I can have a rotten day, or I can be down and tired, and I'll go to the hospital and spend some time with someone, or I'll just have a time where somebody wants to come by and talk with me. I can tell you that is the most energizing experience for me, and I can be so tired before that happens and so excited about life after it happens, and I know that that's the Spirit working. Gary Chapman wrote a book that was entitled Love as a Way of Life, and he writes in that book, he says that there was a guy that just was the most loving guy, kind guy that he ever knew. And this guy used to say to Chapman, he said, you know, I will every morning put on my glasses, I'll put on my pants and my shirt, I'll put on my jacket and my cap, and then I'll picture myself putting on an overcoat of kindness. And I'll stop and I'll pray, Lord, help me touch somebody through my kindness today. Boy, I tell you, that's a good routine for you. To literally think about putting on the kindness that Christ showed. Putting it on as an overcoat, surrounding yourself with that kindness, feeling that in your own heart, and feeling the touch of Christ that is kind and loving to you, so that you in turn can go and be kind and loving to others. There are a lot of ways that you can be kind, simple things that you can do. Like I said, kindness is the simplest form of the love of Christ. But you've got to look at how you can do it. Plan of how you're going to be kind. And one of those things is just to place that overcoat of kindness around you and say that this is going to be a part of what I wear today. I'm putting on the kindness of Christ so that I can change the life of somebody else today. I mentioned earlier in the announcements that we want people to join our care team. The care team is that group of folks that just simply care. They are kind. They are willing to make a dish and take it over to somebody's house when there's a death in the family or there's somebody in the hospital and they need to have some help or... we have folks that will go trim people's hedges and mow people's grass, all sorts of different kinds of things. And I just want to ask you, why are you not a part of that group? You know, is there something that says to you, I ought not to be on the care team? Because we have a very small percentage of our folks that have said they're willing to be on the care team. The truth of the matter is most of us just don't think about it. Most of us just decide, well, no, I don't know how to get involved in that. I don't know how to do that. Let me tell you, you ought to get on the care team. You ought to let somebody know, let one of the staff people know. Write it down in the notebook today on in our registration notebook, just as a note there. I'll be on the care team. Let me know. Help me know how to get involved in being caring. Because if you're not taking the opportunity to put yourself in that position to be caring and kind for somebody, what are you saying about putting on the cloak of kindness? What are you saying about how I'm going to be involved in the ministry of Christ? Same thing goes for our missions team. We have a very small group of our folks that are on our missions team. We're trying to grow that more and more and more so that we can do more and more things. We need energetic folks that will come and be a part of that group of people. You don't have to come to the meeting every month. We just need to know who it is that we can call on to do some of those kind acts that Christ is calling us to do. It may not be something you can do every time you're called. It's fine to say, no, I'm sorry, I've got this going or that going. But if you're not on the mission team, what are you doing in missions? Are you taking the opportunities that are there for you to be in the work that Christ has called you to be? Are you taking those opportunities to be kind? I think there are all sorts of opportunities for us to take on this simple but powerful notion of kindness in our lives. And I would encourage you to try it on for a while. Try on some kindness. All of you are kind people, but try it on in the sense that you're going to put this overcoat of kindness on around you and that you're going to live out your life in a different kind of way, sharing kindness in a new way in this new year. I guarantee you, when you do that, somebody's going to look at you and say, man, that really looks good on you. That kindness is looking good on you. And that they're going to say that kindness is something that truly is one of the ways that they're experiencing the presence of Christ in you. Otherwise, when people look at you and you say that you're a Christian, are they just going to say, man, that just looks like socks on a rooster on you? I hope kindness fits very, very well in your life and shows you that you're putting on Christ can fit just as well.